Still, Queer as Folk. Tonight, a chiropractor spends 27 minutes on Michael's nipples. And Jennifer daydreams about her son being bent over a piano by Brian. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
This episode is called The Art of Desperation.
It first aired on Showtime in the U.S. on January 7th, 2001.
It was directed by Kari Skoglund. This is the second episode in a row from her. And written by Jonathan Tollins.
Now, Patrick, did you know that Jonathan Tollins wrote a fabulous play called Buyer and Seller that actually toured around here in Chicago with Michael Urie? It's a fantastic play about a man who works in Barbara Streisand's basement mall. That's a
I like
real
it
thing.
Already.
That's a real thing, by the way. Just saying. So,
what's this episode about?
The Art of Desperation picks up where we left off with Michael's new chiropractor boyfriend getting into a tug of war with Brian.
Dr. David
Cameron.
Can we call him Dr. Dreamy David?
At this point, you might as well call him McDreamy, and now we're doing a Grey's Anatomy podcast. Anyway, Michael's new chiropractor boyfriend, Dr. David Cameron, gets into a tug of war with Brian over Michael as Ted recovers from his OD by dating Roger, a stable but overweight chorus director. I take issue with the phrase overweight. I don't think Roger is overweight. I think he is definitely not as in shape, but I would hardly call him overweight.
Definitely not. And the actor that played Roger was in a lot of Dick Wolf shows, like various Law and Order series later on.
God.
I don't remember his name. I'm sorry, Roger. But
poor Roger.
Yeah. This episode, I didn't think had really an overarching theme. It just seemed to kind of move things along in a soap opera-ish sort of way.
Yeah, it was... I think unlike the last few episodes where we have like really great stuff involving the mothers or the generational gaps, mm-hmm. this is very plot driven. We just have that going on.
The intro was very strange. This was one of the more interesting intros that we had where Michael and Brian are in a comic store. Michael, I can see in the comic store, but why is Brian there? And what are all these shots like zooming around and looking at different nerds and geeks looking at comics? I just don't know why that was there.
I mean, we hear it time and time again that Brian and Michael are best friends. So I would assume if he's hanging out with Michael, he would indulge in him going to the comic book store because he knows this about Michael.
Yeah.
You know, and then that also allows him some time to flirt with the counter guy, which,
yeah,
like that guy Brian is interested in. Like that just.
I thought he was cute.
He was fine. His hair just looked a little too greasy under that hat for me. I wasn't digging it.
Well, we've found that Brian doesn't really have much of a filter over who he hook
that's
up with.
That's true. Michael purchases a toy for Gus that's going to be a collector's item, which I think is very mm-hmm. nice. And Brian says, oh, I'll take it over there, and basically said, I'll take credit for it, which I thought was...
Yeah.
Odd. but he's going to go over to Mel and Lindsay's to check in on Gus. And he's telling Michael, you need to go to Dr. David Cameron.
I wrote this down in my notes when I was watching it, but I'm not sure the context of it. But I wrote down Brian's line.
I tune out self-pity. It makes my dick soft.
What was that about? I don't remember.
That had to have been when he was ogling the counter guy. Because I think he had to have been talking about how
Michael
doesn't... How his date was disastrous with Dr. David Cameron mm-hmm. and all that. So that's probably what it was tied to, is that like he's tired of Michael just putting himself down. He can just he can go on a second date if he stops being such a pussy about it.
When we leave the comic book store, we see that I think their budget might have kicked in a little bit because there's a little bit of a gratuitous crane shot.
have the equipment. Let's use it.
Yeah, it's rented, and let's make good use of it. So it's the Liberty Avenue street sign. And lo and behold, at the end of the crane shot, there's Justin and Daphne buying friendship bracelets.
God, if there's anything gayer than walking down a gay street is buying friendship bracelets with your...
With a crane shot capturing the moment.
How about these?
They're totally queer.
Shut up. They're symbol of our friendship.
Only to make her pay for it because you don't have money.
No, Kari, what were you thinking in this shot?
She's like, I have equipment. I need to use it.
That's it was one of the first exteriors that we've had that was clearly an exterior shot.
It was one of the first daylight shots I feel like we had in a while.
Other shots of Liberty Avenue seemed to be more set pieces. So it was nice to go on location for one of the first times.
And of course, across the street from the Friendship Bracelet station, that's on the corner of Liberty Avenue. There's Lindsay, Mel, and Gus on a friendly stroll.
What a fucking coincidence.
What a coincidence.
Here they come. How ironic. They don't even live in that neighborhood.
But they're going to lock down the gayborhood.
That's right.
And Justin spots them, and he wants to go over and say hello to them. They at first don't really recognize him.
But first, he says, there's Brian's lesbians.
Look, that's them. Brian's lesbians.
God. He's such a child. There's moments like in the moments where he's like owning his sexuality and he's like doing all these hookups and he's being very bold and brash and he says stupid things like that.
He makes is you still learning like, his vocabulary.
You're a child.
I did like when I think Lindsay says, do we know you?
Yes. And they're like, and I love it. It was like, first of all, how do you forget the person who helped name your son? Which Justin brings up. He's like, I was there the night Gus was born. I named him.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah. You were Brian's infant that night. Daphne had a good line there where Justin introduces her and she says,
I'm not a lesbian, but I'm a big fan.
That's up there with like a longtime listener, first time caller.
But then when Justin offers to like babysit or something like that, and he just leaves Daphne right on the street. He just runs off.
Like not even a bye, just nothing. She got nothing. I'm like, we're just gonna leave Daphne. So not only did he make her pay for the bracelets,
yeah,
he's just like later.
Further up Liberty Avenue in Torso, Emmett and Ted are shopping. And there was some good back and forth dialogue between those two characters. Great acting. Ted's talking about leaving the gay scene after his drug-addled coma.
Oh, please. Can't let one little drug-induced coma get you down. We think
you look unbelievably trashy.
Tuck me into it. I'll buy it.
Which, I mean, you know, I understand wanting to be like, you know, taking a break, especially considering the success that he's had.
But his recovery was like 100%. He was like back on his feet. He had no loss of motor skills, no droopy face, nothing. He was like 100%. But like,
he got lucky, you know? I mean, in the realm of this show, it was very easy for him to recover, but maybe that's something that shook him up enough to realize, like, why am I bothering going to these clubs?
Yeah.
No one is interested in me. The last time I did that, someone tried to drug me.
Oh,
or
Blake.
Not even try. Someone did. And I ended up in a coma and almost died.
Bad is that boy, really? Blake. The point of the setup there was that Ted is leafing through the local gay newspaper. I kind of miss those. There used to be quite a few in Chicago. Those are gone.
Oh, wait, them talking about going through the personal ads. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Let's take it back.
So Ted finds the over 30 night at, what was it called? Like Date and Bait or something?
Date Bait.
Date Bait.
Date Bait.
They have an over 30
night. The only other bait site I know of is the Bait Bus. So,
oh, yeah. .com.
.com. Mm.
But then Emmett busts out. Still
Folk, sponsored by baitbus.com.
Yeah.
But so we see this Date Bait ad and we realize, oh, okay, this is an opportunity for him to be in a group of, it's like a speed dating thing.
Appropriate.
Men. Yeah. But like, yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, appropriate. Men who are interested in, I guess you could say, a relationship, I guess is how it's touted.
Well, I liked how.
But it's removed from like the usual gay scene that Ted has been involved in.
Well, as soon as Ted says they have an over 30 night, Emmett says,
where, at the morgue?
Such problems with that.
It's a recurring theme throughout the show that as soon as you turn 30,
you're dead.
You're invisible.
And I'm like, and it's not because I'm going to be 30 next year. It's
Matt, it's true.
Things just got real, ladies and gentlemen.
It's all because of Bad Boy Blake and his juice that he serves up out of his pocket to unwitting accountants in their 30s.
We all have a bad boy Blake in our lives who will try and not take us out.
Speaking of bad boys, Michael suddenly has an emergency appointment with his chiropractor.
I do too. I would do whatever I had to get back in with Dr. David Cameron.
But this whole thing was kind of overblown. They really go to a great length to make Michael feel terrible about their first date. They went to dinner. Michael went in for some dick. Big deal. Dr. David shut him down, sure. Michael all of a sudden has this bizarre existential life crisis about a date that I think if we really played the tape on that date, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't enough to have Michael just lose his mind over it.
To me, it really felt like a cover for Michael because of how awful Michael was during it. I think it was...
But I just don't think he was that awful. I think he was awkward.
Oh, I think he was terrible.
I thought he was delightfully awkward.
Oh, no. I would have been like...
I would have moved in on him for the sex at the end.
I was like, this was real great, but I'm going to go now.
So Michael's getting his treatment.
This is the end. It's like the final treatment, right? We assume?
Yeah.
Because really, once a doctor goes on a date with his patient, that's kind of got to be the end of that, right?
I think that Dr. David almost went in for a kiss on Michael.
At the very, very end, he has his head up.
Yeah.
And they're at an angle. I was expecting a kiss, and then it cut away. And I think I like squirmed out of my seat. I was so angry. I was like, no, give me the kiss.
Medical malpractice at its finest.
Oh, my gosh.
So after that was a cute little cut scene. But meanwhile, Justin has made his way all the way to Melanie and Lindsay's house. So his stalking is in full power there. And he is on the floor. He's showing his drawings to Lindsay. And Gus is in the room. So it's this nice, like, kind of family type of scene. And then Brian comes in.
Again, multiple toddlers in the room. Yeah.
I liked when Brian came in. He walked past Justin and gave him a polite little whack on the head. And
what is it with him and hitting people on the head?
Well,
that's not how you greet people.
Brian seemed more amused that Justin was there than angry. And it was this interesting interplay between the two. Whenever they run into each other, Brian is almost like he's supposed to be annoyed, but he finds something cute and fun in it.
Yeah, every time we think, based on what has been shown to us of Brian throughout the other episodes, we're expecting him to shut Justin down.
Like, yeah,
cut him out of his life, but no, he keeps him along. I think that's right in describing him as like Justin is amusing Brian. It's almost like a plaything.
He's keeping his attention for sure, and that's what I think Brian reacts to a lot when he sees him is just a challenge, or there's something here, or there's something more to this, and this isn't just the one night stand. It's the one night stand that never went away, never left.
Right, Justin's just persistent.
Yeah, props to Justin. Keep your eye on the prize.
Like, that has to be some golden dick for him to continue to go after Brian like that.
We get to see some more of Justin's pencil sketching, where Lindsay takes a look at... Lindsay gets the first look at Draw me like your French girl of Brian laying out.
So we're talking about the same drawing, but okay.
Yeah. And Melanie catches sight of it, and she just says matter-of-factly,
circumcised, just like I thought.
And all of a sudden, this is a callback to...
The second episode.
Yeah. No bris, no shirt, no service. No shirt, no bris, no service.
Bris was in there.
Right.
When they were trying to circumcise Gus.
And Melanie was out of her mind over that.
Yeah.
But now she's like cool about it. And she's just like, circumcised, just like I thought.
Right. I mean,
where did her anger go? She's supposed to have the hair trigger.
Oh, no. Like, I think she's probably reveling in the fact that he made such a big deal about the circumcision, and to see him that he's cut, that's sort of like a win in her corner. Being like, well, no one stopped them from cutting you, so, you know. It's just her being petty.
Meanwhile, there's this awkward line. I have to use one of my UK chips here.
This is good. You know what? I think you only used two in the last episode.
Can I carry one forward?
So we're going to carry one over. So you get four this episode.
Oh, great.
So you have, yeah, four in the bank.
There's there's a cute little line from Melanie where she says,
"We like Justin. Justin can stay."
That was lifted completely from the UK series, and it was almost a slightly different circumstance. But it was enough that it was just shoehorned right into this one. It was almost like a catchy line. Let's see if we can work it in someplace. Because in this context, where is Justin going to stay? Is he going to move in with them? Stay where? What?
Oh,
what
I was that line? I think she just means like he can stay, like he can continue to be around. Because I think Mel probably enjoys that he annoys Brian a little.
Yeah, but yeah. I think they could have done a better line than that, than just copy pasting it from the UK series.
I mean, they basically copy and pasted the first three episodes. So
true.
What's one line?
Here's the scene from the UK series with Stuart, Nathan, and Lisa.
What are you doing here?
I was passing. We're just saying, weekends, I could look after Alfred. You know, babysit. Because you're at work all week. You must be worn out at your age.
We like Nathan. Nathan can stay.
So, the over 30 night at DateBait.
Oh my God.
.com. The one guy, they're to set the scene, there's a large circle of over 30 people that are very, air quotes, over 30. And they are dressed very suburban, very pedestrian, and they don't look like anybody that the show so far we'd be interested in.
Right. Well, there was a variety of people, but they weren't like the hard-bodied, scantily clad party people that we've been seeing in every episode. I'm looking like, oh, here is the average gay man.
We get our first bear also.
I was so excited. I was like, yes, the first bear.
And there's two cuts. They're separated, but
yes.
His line was, "I like Ben and Jerry's chubby hubby." And then there's a cut to somebody else, and it comes back, and he says, "And I have a Speedo fetish."
Honesty is the best policy, especially when you have a very limited amount of time to make an impression. So,
well,
good for him for being. He's just like, "Here's what I'm into. Take it or leave it."
The next guy says, "I'm looking for a nice guy that likes chihuahuas. I have three."
three little yapping rats.
I swear to God that they put a fat suit on Ted for this scene.
I don't think they did. I'm pretty sure they just, you know what I mean, with the ill-fitting khakis and the tucked-in shirt just doesn't do him any
favors. They schlubbed him up.
Yeah, it's, and
maybe this was like the first three-quarter shot that we see of him. Right. Normally we're seeing like head and shoulder shots.
And here's what I'm going to say about this whole scene. With the way they decided to portray men outside of the club scene of Babylon and Woody's, it was almost mean-spirited.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that.
That was funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like it was funny at the expense of, oh, if you see a gay man like this, this is the desperate level. This is the level of desperate that they're going to be at. And I'm like, you know, go fuck yourself. Just to be truthful. Like, guess what? Men who don't have six packs or a chiseled ass get just as much action and can grab a tan just as easily as anyone else. So
what is a chiseled ass?
I don't know.
I think the abs are chiseled, right?
Sure.
I think you just took away my UK chips on that one.
Yes. Actually, you know what? You had three in the bank. I took one away for being sassy. So,
did you see after Ted gives his little spiel that Roger gives this quick little look of amazement at Ted, and he just purses his lips ever so slightly of like, wow, Ted.
Yes, and I like that.
It was so subtle.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I was, because like the camera held on him just long enough for us to be like, oh, maybe this is the one that'll be interested in Ted.
Yeah.
So like they telegraphed that well. I also love the fact that Emmett wore his number on his crotch.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, I clocked that right away, which was very accurate for Emmett, because like Emmett said he didn't want to be there. He said like, my boyfriend would kill me if he knew I was here. You know, it's like, oh, Emmett.
Emmett did sum up the scene, and I think now I'm seeing what you were talking about with this collection of people where Emmett is leaving, and he says,
"Faggots, faggots everywhere, and not a drop to drink. I can honestly say I have no desire to have sex with any of these people."
That's cold, man.
Yeah, they...
These are people who are like, they're just trying to make it in this world as the rest of us, and just because they don't have the perfect body, or they might be balding or something like that, it's just like...
They oversold the scene, and I think if they wanted to be more politically correct, they could have shot that differently with a little bit different casting and some different dialogue. But I don't know, 17 years ago,
there was a specific kind of gay life that they wanted to portray, and it was sort of at the expense of some of these people in this scene.
Yeah, because Emmett at that time probably was only like a year off from being 30 anyway, so...
Right.
But at the same time, I think the scene was presented in a way that the over 30s were supposed to be at a different stage in life where they're not looking for a barfly. They're looking for what Roger was, which is the music director, the chorus director, right, the piano player, you know, somebody with more of a career versus a job. Emmett represents job. Roger represents career man.
So after we leave Date Bait, we're treated to the second date of Dr. David Cameron and Michael. And they're in Michael's apartment. And
the big buildup.
Oh, my God. It's like you can feel all of the tension boiling underneath them. And finally, Dr. David Cameron takes control, and it was really hot.
But I thought this was out of character for Dr. David, because for everything in the first date, when it was about, I'd like to get to know you, blah, 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 it turns into, I'm going to rip your clothes off, Michael.
But the thing is, he didn't rip his clothes off. He
pulled his shirt up and put it over his head.
No, he was calculating because he didn't tear him up. He put them up over his head and used that to keep his hands.
To blindfold Michael.
Oh, my God. And like to show that he's in control, and that he even said, slow. So he kissed him and slowly worked his way down his chest and spent, as we find out in the gym, not 2 seconds later, he spent 27 minutes on the nipples alone.
Okay, I'm gonna object to that one. That's too long. Stop it. If you have to spend that much time there, you need to like figure out other things to do.
I feel that Dr. David Cameron has techniques that are not of this world.
He's been trained with a very specific set of skills.
He is the Liam Neeson of rim jobs, we are pretty sure. So
they didn't go anywhere near that.
Are you sure?
Put that fantasy back.
Because he says, because they make a point of making sure that Michael says that every time he came. So yeah. He came multiple times with Dr. David Cameron. So that tongue is talented.
Well, so, we leading up to the gym, though, Ted and Roger had gone on a date.
Oh, yes.
They went to a cute little bistro that was clearly shot in an office. The scenery in that was appalling.
But they end up back at Ted's condo.
No, right? Not yet. This was their first date at the restaurant. Okay. With the hunky waiter.
Oh yes, because because Ted keeps looking at the waiter's crotch.
Yeah,
and they make a point of noticing that they're both checking him out.
And Roger says,
"I'm sure he's a fine person."
We're like, "Yes, very fine."
This is also where Roger's trying to like get Ted to break his diet and have like the cheeseburger, the fries, the milkshake, right, and everything.
Oh come on, live a little. I can tell you've been denying yourself for way too long.
First of all, how does Roger know that?
Well, I think it's because Ted is obviously more fit than Roger. So I think he's like, you haven't let yourself go. You're still trying to meet some sort of impossible standard. I think that's what's going on in this line. I think that's what's going on in that line.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
I think it's just him's like, you can relax, you know.
Relax. Don't have a 1,000-calorie cheeseburger.
Yum. Yeah, so it's nice that I think that was an opportunity for Ted to relax and unwind a little.
Well, they talked about wanting to connect with someone appropriate. And I think going into something like this with a checklist of what you consider appropriate or your type or whatever like that is just looking for failure, because you're almost going down your checklist to cast somebody, and nobody's ever going to hit all those markers. And I just didn't like that part about, I'm looking for somebody appropriate. I think that attraction and click works differently than saying, oh, well, I want the following attributes in somebody, and all the hookup apps play right into that.
Right. Because you can filter down to the exact person you want to see, but that doesn't mean you're going to have a connection.
Yeah. I mean, the sayings like always are like to demonstrate it, it's like no fats, no femmes. The whole notion of I want to connect with someone appropriate was interesting for something being shot in 2000 compared to where we are now, where it's more of a, like hookups are more data driven now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless connection driven or appropriateness, because you can find appropriateness in just about anybody. And there's like on Grindr, you have what, like 10 different attributes that you can list about right. yourself.
So then this comes into play while they're at the gym.
Social gym.
Yeah, the social gym with that, whatever the hell that hat was that Emmett was wearing.
Oh, I love that hat.
No, that, I don't care. I don't care what culture it was part of. It was
Happy
wrong.
Mondays hat.
I was offended.
It was a red bucket hat. Ugh. I didn't get so perturbed by it as you did.
I mean, remember, like as I was watching this episode, I immediately took a screenshot and sent it to you going, what is this?
You did.
How dare they? It bothered me to no end watching that hat.
I think Emmett's costuming throughout the entire show is pretty good, though. I think they really capture him well.
Sure, yeah. They definitely show that he has a femme personality and that's okay. He owns that, mm-hmm. Which I think is really great. But that hat was abhorrent and did not deserve to be on him.
The best part of this gym sequence was when Brian was just so amused by Roger's name. Because Ted's just describing it, and he says, Roger, and then Brian just busts out.
Roger?
It's if, like, the name is, like, it's too like, indicative
it's
of
like,
it.
It's, like, the least attractive name in the history of...
I like the name Roger.
Yeah, I don't mind the name Roger either. And so...
Did you see that while Ted was telling that story, Michael is, like, caressing Ted? Is like, he's rubbing his back, like, oh, Ted, you finally found somebody appropriate... Who's not me?
Oh,
it was very subtle. And
that's rough.
Kari Skoglund has been slipping these in for this episode and the last episode. Yeah. And those little touches, even if you don't see him, you're kind of subconsciously picking up on it.
Right. And Brian is just so taken aback when Ted tells him that they, you know, he and Roger are going to want to get to know each other before they have sex. And
oh, but what was Brian's line?
What do you think you are, lesbians? And I'm like,
what do you think you are, lesbians?
Jesus, Brian. Not everyone wants to fuck.
Well, this was weird because Brian had previously encouraged Michael to reengage with Dr. David to get to know him after they had that disastrous, like air quotes, disastrous first date thing. And so is Brian throwing a double standard here, whether it's Ted and Roger or Michael and... Dr. David?
Yes. And you know what I think it comes down to? I think it comes to the attractive nature of Roger compared to Dr. David Cameron. Or either it's that because of the way he's like, why are you going to waste your time on someone like Roger who wants to do all that? Or it could be that he just simply cares more for Michael and Michael's happiness, because it also means that Michael will stop fawning over him.
Yeah, the writing on Brian is getting more and more complex, which is making the character more and more interesting. Sometimes the writing's a little kind of off or sophomoric, but it is pushing the character to a much deeper sense than we've seen. And this is only the sixth episode, so we're still kind of forming our opinions of Brian, but I think a lot of people keep being surprised by what he's bringing. There was another awkward Daphne moment when she's talking with Jennifer Taylor.
My family, I'm black. My parents are black. We're all black. You know what I mean?
I think so.
To try to explain that away, that somehow Jennifer and Justin have, like, I don't know where she's going with it, but Jennifer almost gives like this subtle eye roll at Daphne and just kind of says,
she puts
I think
up
I
with
get
Daphne
it.
So much. It's amazing.
Yeah, Daphne hasn't really come into her own yet. Even though we love Daphne to death, she's still just a little like kind of peripheral. And
yeah, she hasn't had the awakening that I think Justin has had. So she still comes off very much like a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then, boom, everybody's at the Gay and Lesbian Center preparing for the art show.
Oh, my gosh.
Daphne is suddenly there. She must have teleported her way there.
Right. Well, no, she showed up with Justin, but she and Justin are...
They got there pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. And they're talking with someone who's, like, hanging up some artwork. I think it's what she's on a ladder.
Yeah,
she's on this ladder.
She's wearing, like, overalls and a headscarf. She was very much... stereotypical butch lesbian.
Next thing we know is she's asking Daphne to go get a soda with her at the diner.
A soda. What if it's like our town or something? I'm going to the diner for a soda. Do you want to come?
Get a phosphate. And it's really funny because I literally just saw our town like 2 weeks ago. So that's really in my head. So, and Daphne's like, okay. And she just goes up and Justin's like, she thinks you're a lesbian. And she's like, and just like.
But she said something like, why do you guys have all the fun? Or
yeah, she's like, why can't I go
Yeah, so for a few minutes, Daphne's swinging both ways, I think. And we never see them again, do we? I think they're soda. Like, never.
You know that Daphne got eaten out hardcore behind the diner.
What are you doing? She thinks you're a lesbian.
Well... can't I be one of the cool people, too?
I think you have to give me back my UK chip on that one. Then Lindsay is talking to Justin, and Justin's just kind of pacing back and forth looking for Brian. It's like, is Brian going to come? Is he going to come? Is he going to come? And Lindsay had this really great line where she says, don't expect too much from him, okay? She was... empathetic and kind to Justin. Those are qualities of that character that we see quite a bit, that she almost always has the moral high ground, and she wasn't completely shutting Justin down, but of course Brian shows up.
Right. And I think Lindsay was also like, I think so many people have warned Justin about Brian, and then here I think she's like, I know I can't stop you.
Yeah.
But here's where your, I like that she's like, this is where your expectation should be.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that was very clever writing there, and the way that the scene played out. It's one of those moments in the show where it's just a couple lines, but it shows kind of some maturity to it, where it's not just being force-fed to us.
Right, because Justin is being told no, no, no by everyone. And here she's like, you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be real with you.
Yeah, there are many layers to it, which I really liked.
It's great. But we cut to Woody's, and Michael is there with Dr. David Cameron.
Oh, this was so awkward.
And obviously, and I love that, you know, Dr. David Cameron makes it very clear. It's like, oh, nothing has changed since I was last here, or since the last time I came here. It's the same shirtless guys and all this. And Michael makes a comment. I believe Michael makes a comment about the last time he was here with like his boyfriend with he makes a point about mentioning his last boyfriend, which was and it was a long term relationship, but we find out that this partner died.
Yeah, and then they kind of leave it hanging there, and it came back again in a future episode, but we never like find anything about that. I did like Emmett's entrance, I guess we'll call it. He just flies into the scene. It's like he jumped off of a box into the scene.
Hi.
Dr. Dreamy David literally recoils, and Emmett says, hello, gorgeous.
Hello, gorgeous.
Now, let's talk about how Emmett is also wearing leopard print, and I feel like it was a direct callback to Barbara Streisand's entrance. Oh. No, to Barbara Streisand's entrance in Funny Girl when she's in the leopard coat, yeah. fur coat. It looks in the mirror and says, "Hello, gorgeous."
Hello, gorgeous.
And I'm like, this show is gay. Yeah. So I feel like that's a very obvious line. But what I love about that scene and the way that they're introduced is that it plays on the masculine and feminine between the generations. Dr. David Cameron is not used to someone being as feminine and flamboyant and as outwardly.
But he should have been, though, right? Because he used to go. I mean,
there are still people in the gay community or in the queer community that when they see someone fucking with gender norms, they think it is weird and they talk down about people like that. And I think that's what is going on in Dr. David Cameron's mind.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe you and I, Matt, are a little too desensitized to it, where there's not a whole lot that really surprises us if we go out.
No, but not at all.
Maybe actually. Dr. David having gone out in a long time.
Right. He's going to these like nice upscale restaurants and that's where he's taking his dates. So he's never really stepping into a bar scene that has obviously evolved since he last went out.
Yeah.
So to have that sprung on you, like,
yeah, it was a great entrance.
It was a great entrance.
Brian's entrance wasn't so great, though. Oh, he just comes kind of staggering in.
And he's all over Brian. And right. Brian is like, Brian is all over Michael. And Michael can very clearly see that he is drugged up.
You're tweaked. What do you want?
EKGHB. Most of the letters on Sesame Street.
Right. It's like, what the? And Brian lists off the alphabet.
First of all, you really shouldn't take those three together.
That sounds terrifying.
let's check in with Bad Boy Blake on that one. Yeah, let check with Ted for that matter. He just had one of them and he had a 24-minute coma.
Michael is relegated to having to take care of Brian in this moment, and he steps away, which leaves Dr. David Cameron and Brian alone.
Dun, 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 dun.
I mean, Dr. David Cameron is like looking at the way that they've interacted by like how close they are to each other, how handsy they are, just like how close, just physically close they are.
Yeah, the familiarity really.
And that throws him for a loop.
Right. But how much did Dr. David really know about Michael and Brian at this time? Because he had this line.
Well, you've got him well trained.
How much could he have really known at that point?
All that we're given in the show. This is their third date. The only thing we're given is what was happening in the first, which is, I got these clothes from my friend Brian. I bet he looks great in them. And Dr. David Cameron asks the blunt question. It's like, are you interested in him? And he's like, no, it would never happen. We're best friends. We've been best friends for years. And then he leaves it at that. Mm-hmm. But here, when he sees the friendship in action, it's a lot of red flags.
And at this point, he had already disrobed Michael. 27 minutes.
Oh my God.
And
was it 13 on the right, 11 on the, the left?
I think Dr. David was kind of falling for Michael, and he might have been a little bit more predatory, a little more territorial. Yeah.
Yes. And it's very clear because Brian is just as territorial because he could lose the one person who always lifts him up. You know,
right.
Michael's great for that. But to have another man threaten that. And also him being completely tweaked out of his mind doesn't help the matter.
Very common with the series. There's multiple storylines going back and forth. And so the B story here is Ted and Roger getting to know each other in Ted's apartment. It's like Ted is trying to talk himself into being attracted to Roger. And Roger kind of started to annoy me a little in this scene. Well, Ted says, okay, you have to guess this aria. And Roger guesses it, of course. And he says, come on, give me something difficult or something like that. It's like, Roger, you're kind of stuck up. It's
he's a student of music. He would know that.
But he didn't have to kind of put Ted down.
I don't think he was putting him down. I think he was having a playful...
It was
a bit of playfulness between them because he knows obviously Ted is into this as well. So he's like, you got to come on, give me a hard one. And so like,
I think you're right. Maybe the acting was just kind of a little off there because it just sounded like a little too cocky. Whereas I think if it was me in that situation, I don't think I would have been that forceful with it. I would have tried to be a little more circumspect.
I guess I didn't read it as forceful because like it allowed Ted to open up and like, I still can't, like, I can't believe you knew even this one, like, you knew this aria, and you know, they're having the wine, and they have like a nice moment of closeness, and all they do is, you know, all that Roger does is touch his arm, and then at the end of it, he kisses his hand.
So actually, I think this was their pregame to going to the art show, right? Because all of a sudden, Roger's playing the piano at the art show.
Yes, he volunteered. He volunteered to play piano at the art show.
All of the major characters all come together at the
Game Lesbian Center. They all converge at the art show.
And we see just how much Emmett just hates Roger, or hates what Roger represents.
He plays beautifully, doesn't he?
I'm all a ting.
Which I think is, again, so rude. Like, calm down, Emmett.
And then another grand entrance into the art show. Brian, after telling Lindsay that he's not going to go to the show, he mysteriously shows up.
Of course.
There was, this was an interesting scene. There's like tremendous blocking in it because all of these different characters are moving around in the in the art show, and the camera's tracking with them. We see different storylines happening all in the same room, and the camera followed so well that you're able to completely track with it. It reminded me of like a walk and talk from the West Wing where
you're going into various rooms, but you're able to follow like, I'm following this plot point, and then it like bounces off and then goes to another plot point because this person has entered the room.
Well directed.
Yes, it was fascinating, and it kept the stakes of the scene going.
Yeah, it had a good tension that
an amazing tension. I particularly noticed it. So we have, oh my gosh, it's going to be kind of hard to unpack everything that happens in this one particular scene.
Yeah,
we have,
so much. This was almost the climax of the episode.
It really was, because you have, Justin has sketches that are being shown. Mm-hmm. You have Roger.
Pornographic sketches.
Yeah, well, they're tasteful nudes.
Right. Roger at the piano.
You have Jennifer is there because she wants to support Justin.
Well, we have to talk about her entrance also.
Oh, please lead this.
Jennifer comes up the stairs. She's so taken aback by the superhero poster on the wall. And then this flamboyant person comes walking out and gets a wave, and she's almost like jumping back, thinking that she is about to be hit. She was so uncomfortable in this environment. Justin sees her, tries to kick her out.
Because again, he's being a little bit of a prick. Like, his mother is really, really trying.
It reminded me of the time that he jumped out of the car.
Like a spoiled brat.
Yeah. The character just seems to be responding in ways that are too out of sync with his mother. The storyline isn't
connected. Yeah, it's like they're trying to force an antagonistic relationship. But with the way it's written, we're seeing a woman trying to support her son and the son just not having it. And
yeah.
It's just like, wait a minute. This is what any young or what any queer youth would want, is to see that their parents are loving and supporting and trying.
Right.
You know,
we also see Dr. Dreamy David and Melanie interacting.
And Mel is kind of drunk.
But this one is also lifted. This is my second or third UK chip.
This will be the third.
And I had one in the bank, but now I had to give one back.
Yes, you did.
So I'm all out.
This is it. I hope it was worth it.
Dr. David and Melanie are having their awkward little conversation, and Melanie clearly thinks that Dr. David had come with Brian. And so she essentially spills the beans on the whole thing.
There is so much tea being spilt in this moment.
This is always like one of my worst fears, is like making small talk with the wrong person about the wrong people. And
she's ruthless.
Yeah.
She is ruthless about Brian. And then he's like,
Brian and Michael.
Right. And Dr. David Cameron reveals that he's actually here with Michael.
Oh, shit. Oh, you're with Michael.
Yeah.
Jesus. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I mean,
she tries to walk everything back.
She tries to backtrack and
all she had left at the end.
Remove her foot from the mouth, and it is just not working.
All she had left at the end was, do you want a shrimp ball?
Do you want a shrimp ball?
And then he walks away, and the camera stays on Mel.
Yeah.
And she's just mouthing, fuck.
Yeah. We didn't get much of Debbie in this episode, but there is a little scene.
Well, Debbie then ends up playing a very, very specific purpose.
Yeah.
Jennifer makes her way to Justin's sketch, which, as the camera pans, it's obviously of Brian, and Brian's erection.
Yeah.
And everyone is making like a point about how Brian's penis looks. And I'm like, for all the talk that he is, I was very like, eh.
Yeah. Who's the artist on this one?
Apparently Justin. But again, Justin, I mean, Justin's exposure to other digs is
that's why that's why I said who's the artist, because it bore little resemblance to everything that Justin had built it up to.
Jennifer is looking at the drawing, and it's obviously a little uncomfortable because clearly her son has seen this man naked.
Mm-hmm.
And then she clocks Brian going up to Justin. And then she's making, and like this scene, oh, the way they edited this scene was so great, because it picks up its pace, and her connecting that the man all over Justin right now is the same man that is naked and that Justin drew. And then there's this fantasy that builds out in Jennifer's mind, mm-hmm. as Brian just overtakes Justin and makes out with him and then pulls his pants down on top of the piano. It is like, I mean, I'm assuming that no parent ever wants to imagine their child having sex, no matter if it's straight or gay sex.
Why is Jennifer even imagining like something that specific? She doesn't know what that's about. It's just like, wow, Jennifer, you have a dirty mind.
I mean, maybe
you are a wicked woman.
Maybe she went onto the internet without the safe search and typed in gay, and that's what came up. I mean, it's totally possible. So she, you know, makes her way for the door, and Debbie immediately follows suit because she's watching this whole thing unfold as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that music was like so like spooky and haunting.
Listen, we cover Brian's cock, and
oh, we left out Debbie and Emmett's little scene.
Oh yes, Emmett. By the way, Emmett is looking fabulous in this scarf. Who does he remind me of? It's like he almost looks like Charles Carol Nelson Flynn. Riley from Hollywood Squares with the scarf. I mean, it's positively 70s flamboyant, and it's wonderful.
Yeah,
but continue.
Debbie is saying that like Michael's gift is to take care of people, but he's quite okay with antagonizing Justin. So do you think that Debbie realizes just how Michael is being awful to Justin? Or do you think that maybe she thinks that he really is being good, but he is not being a good person to Justin. He starts out with like the best intentions, right, of like, we have to take care of this kid, but he's a dick to Justin. And Debbie's saying that Michael's gift is to take care of people, but it's really to take care of Brian.
Right. And so, I mean, maybe she hasn't seen enough interaction with Justin and Michael, because I think the most she's seen was when Michael brought Justin to the diner for the first time.
Well, they were in Michael's bedroom.
That's true. There was that. Oh my God.
So this cute little scene ended with Emmett kissing Debbie on the cheek, and they're walking together arm in arm. This was the beginning of a series-long BFF relationship between Debbie and Emmett, and I liked that it was introduced in this way, because later on in the series, we find a lot of really interesting stories with Debbie and Emmett. This was the first one.
And so the last people I think we're left with after Jennifer has stormed out of the room, mm-hmm. We have Ted and Roger looking. They're looking at some sort of drawing, and it's of a very muscular man, and you can very clearly see his junk hanging out, yeah. And they're just breathing heavier, and they're acknowledging the beauty of that. And finally, Ted's just like, Roger,
I'm ready.
And Roger's like, I said I would play the piano. And they're like, you're volunteer. Yeah, fuck that. And they just laughed. And so we're then treated to this first intimate moment.
Oh, it was so awkward.
Sometimes you think you have a good romantic chemistry with someone, but then the sexual chemistry is just boo.
It was shot so well, though, because you really pick up on the awkwardness of it.
Yeah, like Ted hits his head on the headboard.
It was not a hot sex scene the way that so many others were in the series. And it was just shot in such a way that you really, really got that.
Like, oh, the use of like the ticking clocks.
Yes.
To show just like Ted is just like trying to get through this.
For me, it was when Roger took his socks off. I was like, whoa.
It was just, yeah. And then finally Ted's just like, he has to call it quits, and he I mean, it's not exactly what you want to hear when you're trying to be in the throes of passion, but when the passion's not there, you know.
Yeah, Ted wraps it up with,
"You're just not my type."
Type? And then this is where Roger, I think, I understand his frustration.
Oh, they unload on each other, though.
Yes,
not in the way like, that we like were
Roger,
expecting.
Roger just like, because like, you
he gets both
you're
barrels
not, you're
out.
Not, you're not bad. You're worse. And I'm like, yeah. Whoa, dude. First of all, Ted does not owe you any sex.
Right.
And so to claim that he's just as bad, it's just sometimes the chemistry is just not there. And you have to respect that.
But Roger, I think Roger had like some valid points about it.
Oh, sure.
He but totally then Ted did. Just goes like for the cheap shots and just demolishes him.
And what about you? You know, after you conduct your 501st tribute to Sondheim, you might try going to a gym. You know, get on a treadmill for once in your life, would you? And do something about your breath.
And then you see that Ted feels bad. All of a sudden, he's just like, oh, God. All these words were just flying out of my mouth. Right. And as they were, I was trying to pull them all back in. And then he just says, listen, I don't suppose we could still be friends.
Door slam. He was out like Roger Nora in like, Doll's House. It was amazing.
I don't suppose we could still be friends.
So let's go to Babylon.
Oh, that's right. This episode's wrapping up, so we got to get to Babylon.
the gang's all there. All of a sudden, everybody has left the art show. They left Ted's house. Everybody shows up at Babylon.
Right. And then, of course, Justin and Daphne show up.
Brian had a very 2000s line where he says,
it's so good.
Oh, look, it's the cast of Zoom. And
I cackled at that line.
I barely remembered Zoom. I had to look it up. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah.
It's so funny. It's such a great line.
A PBS kids show airing at almost the exact same time. There was this really subtle dominance play between David and Brian. Ooh. Over Michael. It's not the first or the last time that Emmett jumps in and saves the day by dancing. Right.
Brian takes Michael out to dance, and Emmett is obviously picking up on the vibe with Dr. David Cameron. So he invites
Hello,
him out to dance.
Gorgeous.
And I like that Dr. David Cameron kind of loosens up and starts dancing with Emmett. Brian had like a cherry stem or something in his mouth. He had something.
Did
because
he?
Well, yeah, because then he like deep tongues Michael on the dance floor.
With a cherry stem in his mouth?
Yeah, he does something. There was something that there was some sort of transfer of something because that fueled Dr. David Cameron. Pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ted has gone to the bathroom.
Oh,
and
God.
we're seeing all of the people going in there. They're either making out or doing drugs or fucking or something.
As soon as he started heading for the bathroom, like the music, the lighting, everything just went like very dark. And I'm like, uh-oh. And guess who's in the bathroom?
Bad boy Blake.
Mm.
In the urinal right next to Ted. And
there was some good dialogue here, though.
Yeah, like Blake like tries to apologize, sorta, kinda, little bit.
Yeah, they were having this little kind of drunk bar exchange back and forth, and Ted likes what he's hearing from Blake, and you could see the gears in Ted's head turning, and he's like, "Oh, I can get past this guy drugging me."
Right. Well, he says something like, because like Blake reveals that he waited around the corner for the ambulance to show
up.
Yeah,
he called 911.
Yeah, because Blake was the one who in fact called 911, but he didn't want to get caught with the drugs.
Right.
So like, I guess that's a redeeming quality.
Well, and then Ted's falling for it.
Yeah.
Ted's falling for the line, and then bam, Blake doesn't know his name.
Well, I think Blake was like with someone, and so he was...
Oh, you think that was
because he was just like
for the benefit of the other guy.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, I'm just talking to some guy. I'm like, no, it seemed like very much like a deflection.
Well, I definitely like that you can take it two ways, where you either pick up on the super subtle part of Blake's with this other guy, and then you've got this other notion that, you know, maybe Blake didn't really remember him. He never called him by name, so
because you know, he asked, "What's your name again?" and he said, "Ted." And
yeah,
it was rough. And so as Ted's walking out of the bathroom, he's using his usual lines that we saw in the beginning of the show. "Hey, how's it going?" And everyone just dodging him, saying no. Everyone's turning him down. At one point, he like snarls and almost bites a guy's shoulder.
What was that?
I was like, did that happen, or is that in his mind? Is that to say that he's literally back on the prowl again? Like, I don't know what that was, but
I think we were just kind of wrapped up in Ted's head for that. It was really well shot. He's coming out of the depths. We're going from like this dark red funeral music to the real dance music is starting. He's climbing the stairs, and at the top of the stairs is his savior, Emmett. He's back in his comfort zone. It's what he's always known. He never knew what it is to meet the hot twink in the bathroom and take his GHB and then run into it again. So he's back to what he was okay with, which is always being rejected.
Right. And he's like, he revels in it. He's so happy. He's like, he literally says, "I'm back." And that's great news for Emmett. And they go and get a drink. And we see Dr. David Cameron winning over Michael by saying the simple words, "I want to take you home."
Yeah.
And that is like, he might as well have put his middle fingers in front of Brian and said, "Fuck you."
And they just left.
And they just straight up left.
We get a slow dissolve to Brian staring at the drawing that Justin did of him, and he's being blown.
I think by the comic book guy.
Oh, was it?
I thought it was. At least I assumed. I figured we finally got, because he was wearing a hat, which also Brian put that hat on his head, and I'm like, I would be worried about lice.
Oh, jeez. I think that's the least they need to worry about there.
Wow.
And that's the end of it, right?
Well, no, because we have to wrap up with Dr. David Cameron bringing Michael home.
They have a home scene?
Yes, they go back to Michael's apartment, and he lifts up Michael, and I'm like, "Oh, hello, Dr. David Cameron. Lift me up." And he tosses him on the bed.
Oh, right.
And they start.
Oh, because Michael was like passed out, drunk, and tripping.
Oh, yeah, Michael
over
was
everything.
Drunk, and
Dr. David got a little rapey.
Well, I don't think he got rapey, but he
took advantage of him.
He asked the question, "Who are you thinking about?" And all Michael can do is laugh and falls asleep.
When you close your eyes, who are you thinking about?
Ouch.
Ooh. So that brings us to the end of this episode.
Our conclusions. Does this episode still hold up 17, almost 18 years after it shot? I'm going to give this one a split decision. So on the no side, the over 30 night is kind of all but extinct now, as far as I know. I think there's other ways that people meet each other with a variety of apps and data-driven types of things. I'm not too sure that those types of gatherings really happen anymore. And I sort of doubt that Ted and Roger would have ever given it a shot in the first place based on the amount of data that could be gathered in advance. I just don't see that scenario being all that plausible these days. On the yes side, there's another great Debbie and Jennifer scene where a mother is coming to terms with a newly out gay son, and that definitely holds up.
While I appreciated the Debbie and Jennifer scenes, I'm going to say the episode does not hold up. And I think for the reasons of like the over 30 night and claiming that, you know, once you're past 30, your gay life is over. I think
that part's true.
That is so not true. And I'm going to hold on to that as I turn 30 next year, Patrick. I feel like so many people are hitting their prime now when they get into their late 20s and early 30s. I think people are finally able to pursue what they want openly and freely.
Well, and after all, Brian does turn 30 in the series, right. And didn't hold him back.
And I also think that the notion of what is attractive in the gay or lesbian or queer world has definitely changed. I think the date bait scene is particularly mean-spirited really rings false now, just because they are not a conventionally attractive person. I think there are very attractive qualities in Roger, especially because he obviously knows like
how to play the piano.
Well, he's obviously cultured, can be funny and can be enjoyable. And so I think there are totally things to be attracted to in that. And again, while I enjoy that there are the scenes with Debbie and Jennifer for ringing very true, I'm going to say hard no on this episode.
Okay, that's episode 6. Next time we'll be talking about episode 7, Smells Like Codependence. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Thanks for listening. Leave a like, share with a friend, and subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Still, Queer as Folk was written and performed by Patrick Randall and Matt Dominguez. Made with love in Chicago.
Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Fine.